How you doing, Dan?
I'm all right. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing well. We're doing well. Just, you know, checking social media to see who's playing and who isn't playing. How'd you like to be setting the line for Major League Baseball right now?
How'd you like to be a traveling secretary for a team like that? How'd you like to be Mike Shaw, who does an unbelievable job? You guys both know him. How'd you like to be Mike Shaw these days with everything that's going on?
I sent him. I sent Shaw a text on, when was it? I sent him a text just after the Buffalo thing happened. And I said, how you doing? He goes, fine.
Dan, how do you think Derek Jeter is handling all this?
I'm sure you know Derek better than I do.
How do you think he's handling the Marlins thing?
I would think internally, behind closed doors, there's fire coming out of his ears. But publicly, you can't. You don't want to portray that. The one statement I saw, and I'll be honest, I don't read every single. Every team's putting out statements. There's so much going on. But, they strongly implied at the beginning it didn't happen under our watch in Miami at summer camp. It happened once we got on the road. Mm-hmm. And that's all well and good, except now, they're being investigated by MLB, and as I'm sure you guys have talked about it, there are reports maybe some of the guys went out in Atlanta on the town, and that's how it started, and we don't know. Yeah. And maybe we'll never know. But to me, that's a worse look than if it had happened in your own ballpark, because everybody knew you weren't supposed to go out on the road. It's one of those you had one job kind of things, and I understand it's a really hard job, but your one job is behave yourself for 2.5 months, because if you screw up, you could take the whole thing down with you. And the Marlins thing has impacted six teams. Four have had cancellations and two have had rescheduling, and it can't happen again. I think they might be able to weather this storm, and now you got the St. Louis thing going on, but we can't have every week where teams are we going north or south, are we playing or not, and doubleheaders, and there's got to be a certain amount of integrity to the season.
Well, and the thing, Dan, that I think would give it would give me, and it would, I'm sure it's given people in the NFL and other sports a lot of concern here, is it's one thing to say that we're not okay, we're going to avoid hot spots. But first of all, the hotspots aren't stationary. The coronavirus has this annoying habit of moving around. Mm. So now we've got a team in St. Louis that may or may not have had a couple of positive tests as a result of time spent in Minnesota. The Marlins could talk about Atlanta. This just, to me, gets to the point that, we look ahead to the fall, even if you're going to have a second spike, or if the NFL or the NBA or the NHL is looking at getting a schedule back. If this thing keeps traveling like this, what Major League Baseball is going through right now, to me, only reinforces you really need to start thinking about having a bubble again next year, at least to start the season. I don't know if you can do that in the NFL. I don't think you can. But you have to start at least thinking about it, given what's going on here.
I don't know how you do it in football and baseball, though, Jeff. I really don't. Basketball and hockey, to me, seem easier. So let's say the three of us are in charge and they're going to bubble in April. We're going to bubble at the beginning of next season. Where are we bubbling? Florida, Texas, and Arizona are not where we want to be. Mm-hmm. If they're not where we want to be now, they're probably not where we want to be in the spring. So if you say, okay, East teams, you're all in New York, you're using Yankee and City, and Midwest teams, you're all in Chicago, you're using Wrigley, and I never know what the White Sox park is called, and so on and so forth.
I think it's Guaranteed Rate Field or something.
Guaranteed Rate Field, thank you. So, but that's two ballparks in a city. You're supposed to play, you've got 10 teams.
Yeah.
You're supposed to play 5 games a day. Can you play a triple header in one park and a double header in another park and sanitize clubhouses? And how are all those teams sharing clubhouses? I love the concept of a bubble, but if we start trying to think about how it actually works for baseball, I don't think it does. I don't think there's a way to do it.
No, I don't either. But what I was saying, I think if I'm other leagues, if I'm the NBA or NHL and I'm looking ahead to next year, I'm looking at what baseball's going through right now.
Yes.
I'm thinking, wow, we've got to. And Michelle Roberts, the National Basketball Association Players Association executive director, has already said, we've got to at least be having the discussion about starting the season in a bubble. Next year. Anyway, I wanted to go ahead, Dan. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and there, I guess there are various levels of this. Can you play in home fields but have no fans? Will fans be back? And you're right. I think November 1, if they get through October, November 1 if not before, is when you got to start sitting down and planning next season. But right now they're bailing water so quickly on this season, I don't know that anybody can even think about next season.
All right, I wanted to get to this question. Amy in New Brunswick sent it in, 590-590 is a text line, because we got a lot of time to talk about the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. She wants to know, what was the biggest good surprise of the first week? And we'll talk about some of the other issues with this team. But Dan, you know, I look at what I've seen so far, and Teoscar Hernandez has been a big surprise. Jordan Romano, to me, has stood out because I had heard all these things about him. You know, he had an up and down time with the Jays last year, but I've seen 99 easy out of that arm. I've seen 98 easy out of that arm. To me, Jordan Romano is a standout right now.
Great. And the only thing that would make me say he's not as big of a surprise is we saw it in summer camp. So we kind of had a feeling that it was coming. Teoscar, I love what I'm seeing from him. Now, we've seen this version of Teoscar in stretches. Second half of last year, he was good. We've never seen it over the course of a whole season. Like, if this is who Teoscar is going to be, this is a really good player. But can he sustain it? You know, we forget he was in the minors for part of last year. Like, he needed a tune-up, right? And then he came back, and he was much better. I'll give you, like, other than overall pitching depth, which I think has been generally very good with a couple of obvious, notable, much-discussed exceptions, Thomas Hatch is a guy who I'm excited about. I see a big league arm. I see a good big league arm right there, and I see a low pulse and a, you know, even keel and a very veteran way of going about his business, even though he's a 25-year-old who's only been in the majors for a week. I really like Thomas Hatch, and whether he eventually becomes a starter or whether he's soaking up multiple innings in the middle of close games when the starting pitcher doesn't get deep, I'm pretty excited about Thomas Hatch.
Yeah, I like Danny Jansen. Offensively, listen, I had my doubts. You know, last year, you got to give the Blue Jays a little credit. They could have went a different way with Danny, right? He was having a lot of non-competitive at-bats. This year, that looks like that's turned around, right? He's got a lot more confidence. He looks like an established starter behind the plate offensively now, right? He's a little wider. He's opened up. That's freed some things up. He's got a trigger with that barrel, right? He's throwing it a little bit more. He's got a little backspin. He's got a little attitude up there. And I know a big guy you've talked about, Dan, is Santiago Espinal, right?
Yes,
every team needs to have that guy that can catch it everywhere and do it that much above everybody else. And I didn't really know he had that in him until you start watching him around shortstop and the way he catches it in his backhand and his strong arm. I like him.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, I went to summer camp, I don't know, 7-8 times. I went down there a lot. Mm-hmm. Buck was quarantining and Siddle was in Windsor. So we set up a text chat and I was texting them. I was kind of doing text play-by-play of the intra-squad games for them. And every single day I would say to them, I'm telling you, every day, Espinal does two or three things that you notice. And it might be good base running. It might be throwing a smart defensive play, throwing to the right base. It might just be a really competitive at-bat where he fouls off five pitches in a row from a good pitcher. You notice him. And is he ever going to be an everyday shortstop in the big leagues or an everyday second baseman in the big leagues? I don't know. But is he a capable utility guy in the big leagues? Like, I think he's that right now. And he's only been in the big leagues for a week, and he might not have made the team if Brandon Drury had been able to play right at the beginning of the season, because there's some overlap in the things that they do or that they're being asked to do. But Drury came back, and I can't remember the move when Drury came back, who they put on the IL or what happened. It might have been when Giles got hurt, so they had that spot already. And Espinal is still there. Now, if they go down to 28, and I don't know that they're going to do that. I think they might change the rule and just stay at 30 all year. But if they go down to 28 and 26, he might be in jeopardy because he's got options and they're always going to need arms and that sort of thing. But I really like him. I think he's a good utility big league ball player. Maybe he might even be more than that.
Okay, million-dollar question. Do you think we are being too hard on Vladdy?
Well, he doesn't look good,
nope.
Right? I mean, the at-bats don't look great, and, you know, he looks heavy, right? So, I mean, those are two things that I don't know how you argue. So, we don't have a lot of access for information to find out, you know, what makes him tick and what's he thinking and how's he feeling, and because we're not around the team, right? We're Zooming with them like everybody else, and understandably so. But I'm a little concerned. I mean, again, it's only a week, but I'm a little concerned. You know, that he hits the ball on the ground a lot. And he just doesn't look comfortable. And I didn't see his minor league at-bats. I saw the numbers and I saw the odd highlight. But he destroyed minor league pitching. Destroyed it, you know, like Acuna did and Soto did and even more than those guys did. And what I don't know is why was it different when he got to the big leagues? And again, he was a slightly above average offensive player last year. Right? OPS plus was 104, whatever it was. Slightly above average offensive player as a 20-year-old. That's good. So you'd figure he'd be better as a 21-year-old. I feel a little bit for him because now he's adjusting to a new position, and that's not the simplest thing to do on short notice at the major league level. But I also think some of this is on him. So I'm a little concerned, but it's only seven games, and hopefully he'll turn it around. But I almost think he's going to need like a full reset in the off season and come into camp next year, knowing his position, come into camp next year, hopefully in better condition, physical condition, and then see what he is. I hope he can dig himself out this year. And again, it's only been seven games, so hopefully he will.
Dan, what do you think they have to see from him? Right, he's not going to lose 30 pounds in the next 2 months.
No.
What do you think they need to see from him?
Yeah. No, you know, as you know, you get in shape in the off season to thrive during the season. So, I mean, I think they'd like to see him improve his conditioning a bit. I think they'd like him to make a great effort at first base and show some progress defensively. But I assume you mean the bat, because ultimately he's going to be judged on the bat. Take the ones you're supposed to take, swing at the ones you're supposed to swing at, and somebody's got to help him figure out why the ball's on the ground so much. That's the weird part to me. Like, it's not just like he's hitting down and away sliders or knee-high fastballs on the ground. Mm-hmm. He's hitting thigh-high fastballs on the ground. And, again, when you put up the numbers that he did in the minors, and it was everywhere, right? It's not like he had a good month, a bad month, a good year, a bad year. I mean, it was constant numbers that he was putting up in the minors. You'd think there'd be a significant, a pretty good amount of carryover when he got to the majors. And again, it's only seven games, and they're going to Tampa Bay and Washington got some pretty good arms, right? I mean, let's look at some of the guys they face too. So some concern, yes, but, you know, let's give him another week or 10 days, see if the quality of the at-bats improves, see if his confidence improves. But whether it's Guillermo Martinez or Dante Bichette or Dave Hudgens or somebody, I don't know. Is he just not getting his foot down in time? I've heard Joe Siddle talk a lot about timing, just that he's a little bit late. I'm not smart enough to know what it is, but something looks off.
What have you made of Hyunjin Ryu through his first two starts?
Command hasn't been great, and he's clearly a command guy, right? Everybody's a command guy to a certain extent, but, you know, Hyunjin Ryu needs command more than, a Nate Pearson probably will need command, given that Nate throws about 10 miles an hour harder than Hyunjin Ryu throws. So I don't think his command has been great. I think anybody expecting him to come over and have a 2.32 ERA in the American League East, I think that's unrealistic. You know, pitching for the Dodgers is different than pitching in the American League East, even in this crazy season with a weird schedule and all that. I think he'll be okay, but I like, even when they signed him, I thought it was a great signing, but I didn't expect him to come over and finish second in Cy Young like he did last year in the National League or something. I think he's going to be a good stabilizing influence. And, you know, in a month, we may look at Pearson as the one and Ryu as the two. Who knows? So, again, it's two starts. He hasn't looked great. You can see that he's fighting his command a little bit. Like, the pitch to Suzuki yesterday was supposed to be down and in. It was up and away, and it got clocked into right center for a two-run double. Ryu doesn't usually miss his spots by a foot and a half. He's a very low walk guy, very precise guy. So, you know, give him a little time to tune up. I think he'll be fine, but again, I don't expect a 2.32 ERA.
Okay, Dan, before we let you go, I want to ask you how it's been calling games away from the field.
You know what? So obviously it's not our first choice, but we all get it. I will tell you that our crew, our producer, Doug Walton, our director, Troy Clare, and everybody on the crew have done a 12 out of 10 job helping us feel comfortable. You guys have probably seen the setup, whether it's in person or on social media. Mm-hmm. We have this enormous monitor right in front of us with the game feed, and then we have all kinds of other monitors, cameras from the visiting ballpark that let us see the bullpens or a high home look at the defense to see if they're in a shift or if the infield's in. We can see the scoreboard, and we have one what's called a unilateral camera that we get. So if they're telling a 30-second story about Asdrubal Cabrera, we can take a shot at Lourdes Gurriel and talk about him. So the cooperation, from what I understand, between our gang and the Rays gang and then our gang and the Nationals gang has been exceptional. They've been unbelievably helpful. And this is the way it's going to go all year, where you're collaborating with the other team's broadcasters. The one thing is we're always going to kind of be the road team. We're never going to have our people at our ballpark calling a game. But that having been said, it's been, I hate to use the word easier, but it's been way less of an adjustment and more seamless than I thought it would be. And really by day three, we kind of felt in a rhythm. There are certain things that are a little bit tricky, like a runner going first to third on a single. There's some things we just can't see the way we normally do at a ballpark. But, you know, I believe in being transparent with the viewers. And if I didn't see something, I'll tell them. And, you know, I think everybody's just so happy to have sports back on TV, and they get we're in a studio. So, you know, hopefully the viewers are understanding of it. But it's been easier than I thought it would
be. I think I speak for everybody listening that you and Buck have hit a grand slam every time.
Yeah, I
appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's nice of you to say. I appreciate it. I wouldn't want to do this for the rest of my career, but I'm thrilled to do it in 2020.
I wouldn't want your job because I'm assuming you have a great home run call. And that when that ball goes up, that's got to be a little bit of a, you know, is it out or isn't it out?
So Vladdy hit one. Was it yesterday? He pulled one and he got it in the air. Mm-hmm. And it looked pretty good.
Yeah.
And it was 15 feet shy of the warning track.
Yeah.
And I said on the air, I don't know if you're watching, I said on the air, well, like, fool me on that one. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, the most nerve-wracking one was opening night. Biggio hit a home run.
Yeah.
And it looked pretty good off the bat. But again, when I'm at the ballpark, I look at the monitor for the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And once the ball is hit, I look at the field.
Right.
And then I can see the ball. I can see the fans rising up. People don't understand how much we use the fans standing up. The fans can tell when the ball is coming to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell where the ball is going by where the fans stand up. And I watch the outfield or whatever. So you can't do any of that. So Biggio hits it, and I thought he hit it pretty well, and I start getting into my call, and I got two things on my mind. One is, I'm not really sure if this is a home run, and I don't want to, like, a pie in my face on the first day of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And two is, I'm sitting in a studio and calling a home run for the first time, and I don't know if I'm going to be way too quiet or if I'm going to overcompensate and be way too loud and sound foolish. So the first thing I did, I taped Jason 30, and the first thing I did was I came home and I fast-forwarded to the Biggio home run to see if I sounded okay.
Yeah, this comes as a big shock to you, Dan. It was really good.
It was great. It's all of them have been great.
Yeah.
Thank you. We're having fun, and you know what? It's a pandemic. We're all in this together, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.